Good morning. I'm Natalie Gochner. This is Both Sides of the Aisle. I represent the political center and Representative Dan McKay. Welcome, Dan.
Hey, good morning.
And we have sitting in for Senator Jim Dabacus, Sasha Lux Morgan, who's the president of the Young Democrats of Utah. Sasha, great to have you in the studio.
Thanks for having me on this morning.
I love the name Sasha. It's probably because Natalie kind of goes to Natasha or something, and I have no idea, but we're glad you're here.
There's a similarity there.
There's
I can see it. Yeah.
There's something. Well, we're going to start by talking about Justice Anthony Kennedy's retirement. That news has just recently come out. We got a president who now gets to make a pick, unless, of course, they follow the McConnell rule and just hold until the next president, Dan.
There's no McConnell
rule. Okay. No, McConnell made the rule. It's his rule. We should follow
it. Can we stop thinking about you got a president in the middle of his term?
And so he can't act.
He's talking about the presidential race, right, when the McConnell rule was created. I'm going to say that. Its genesis was Mitch McConnell saying that it shouldn't be decided. But honestly, you know, you look at for people that don't pay attention, I'm just going to back up really quickly. The Supreme Court is the president's legacy. You know, people want to talk about
because they're lifetime appointments.
They're lifetime appointments, and they shape the country. They shape policy. They say it's yes or no on one issue or another. And the Supreme Court
just said something kind of controversial, there's no judicial restraint.
Exactly. I mean, the Supreme Court.
Come on, that's
is an
long
independent
over.
Branch.
I know, but that's long over.
Okay.
I agree with you. That's the way the framers intended it. But the Supreme Court
are you admitting that McConnell made a strategic misstep in creating
his
rule?
That was totally the right thing.
I just am trying to press you, Dan, that I knew what judicial restraint was.
I know. That was actually really quite impressive.
Hey, let's talk about, we're hearing right now that Senator Mike Lee's off the list, but it was quite interesting to see the initial list had two Utahns on it, two brothers.
Yeah.
That would have made Christmas really awkward, I think.
Yeah.
Some good sibling rivalry.
If Mike wasn't off the list, it would be interesting to be there for July 4th, right? Everybody's having a hot dog. And
two Supreme Court.
Actually, staring at each other from opposite sides of the yard.
Tom and Mike obviously have a great relationship. Tom's the older brother.
On the Utah Supreme Court.
Yeah, and he's on the Utah Supreme Court. But Tom Lee is a phenomenal person. And so I don't know, honestly, and this just shows you how much I watch the Utah Supreme Court as far as the issues. But I don't think Tom and Mike operate from the same worldview, right? Mm-hmm. I think they have a different, political take.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if that will yield different results.
Right.
But Tom's still there. They're saying Mike's off, but Tom's still there. But even then, they've really narrowed it down to two. And I think they've narrowed it down to one. But I think they're trying to make it sound like there's two.
Sasha, we got a peek into just sort of the political feelings in this state, inclinations, because once Senator Lee was mentioned, there started to be talk about who could be the appointed senator if he were picked.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, it's a fun horse race, right?
Yeah, yeah. What did you see in that?
So I'm going to be honest. I saw it.
Were there
from
any Democrats mentioned? I'm just kidding.
Well, we weren't holding out hopes that that the governor was going to be appointing a Democrat to the Senate.
I wouldn't be surprised.
I mean, maybe if your party makes him any more angry.
Mm. I could see that going.
Some mud in the eye.
But some interesting names that were floated.
Some interesting names. So from my side, I think from the Democratic side, people were thinking somebody maybe like a Greg Hughes, maybe a Mia Love, but unclear, you know.
Yeah. Dan, what were the names you saw going around? And your name was put out there.
Yeah, but you also had Derek Miller, who, you know, the governor picks him for just about everything. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Derek is a fine person.
Current president CEO of the Salt Lake Chamber.
Yeah, current president of Salt Lake Chamber. You also, and I'm trying to remember, there was another unlikely pick. Oh, not unlikely. Thomas Wright was also kind of on that list of people that could get confirmation and support of the state's
interest. You know what? I would have been advising the governor if I were in the governor's office. I would have had him pick someone who would commit not to run for reelection.
But placeholder people generally aren't effective when it comes to being in office.
I mean, I think they can vote their conscience and do some great things. I just didn't want them to spend their 2 years, whatever, you know, trying to position themselves to be reelected. I would. And you're also giving someone a huge political gift that isn't really earned. It's an entitlement when you're an incumbent like that. So I would have said, who is it out there that will just go lend service for 2 years?
Yeah.
I don't see the strategy.
We could appoint Mitt Romney.
What about Josh Romney? And we could just have two Romneys. Romney.
Let's just get it
very
over.
Good,
Romney
Sasha,
the elder,
very good.
Romney the younger.
Hey, so we had the primary elections. No surprise that Governor Romney beat out Kennedy for the position in the 3rd Congressional District. Curtis beat out Herod. This was pretty much all expected.
I mean, I was at a Democratic candidate's watch party Tuesday night when the news about Romney got announced, and we had a good laugh about it. Like, okay, surprise, surprise.
But he's a better candidate for the Democratic, person than Kennedy. Is that right?
I mean, if I have to have one of them, I would prefer Romney. I lived in Massachusetts.
Okay.
He was my governor. He was not the worst. He wouldn't be my first choice.
I hope you like that, Governor Mitt. He wasn't the worst.
Well, but then I got to have Deval Patrick as my governor, and he was amazing.
Okay,
so.
Okay, fair enough. Dan, any commentary from you on the primaries?
You know, there weren't any surprises. And that's, if I was counting my vote, and I was asking myself, it always goes back to this, right? There were no surprises in the primary election. Not a single one. All the convention leaders, with the exception of Mitt Romney, who lost by 1 point, but I'm convinced that had a different issue. I'll talk about that in a second. But everything, there were no surprises. And so really we spent a whole bunch of money. We had a lot of rigmarole and we got no surprises. The Mitt Romney race, well, everybody says, well, that's majorly different. I take umbrage with that. If Mitt Romney had not been so critical of President Trump, I am convinced Mitt Romney wins in convention very easily.
Mm-hmm. But I don't think he was that critical. I mean, maybe back in the day, but not recently.
I don't think you can't replay that video over and over.
I think President Trump has a long memory.
Yeah, and I think there's that.
I'm not
and
saying
even
he's consistent within that memory, but I just
but if, he,
think,
if
you said something bad
been,
about him,
yeah,
I don't
true.
Think he'll ever forget it.
Yeah, and so I just look at I think if Mitt Romney had been more supportive of the president, he runs away with a convention because he didn't. He ended up having a primary challenge, and it worked out fine for Mitt because when you outspend your opponent $4 million to $150,000, it's going to be a tough race.
Sasha, you just have finished, come back from, helped host a Young Democrats of America conference. Was it here in Salt Lake City?
It was here in Salt Lake City. It was right downtown. So
how does that happen?
How does that happen?
I'm just thinking of the dynamics of the Young Democrats.
See, you go to how, I'm saying why. But that's a whole different issue.
You know, we put in a bid with the national organization that we wanted to host it here, and we were selected.
Did you have good weather? It was beautiful while they were
here? It was beautiful weather. We didn't get outside a ton because we were pretty busy with trainings and speakers. But we had some great internal Utah speakers. Shireen Gorbani, Mayor McAdams came and spoke to the Young Democrats of America. Jeff Merkley came out and also addressed us and then went to the rally to keep families together. So it was a good weekend. We had a good number of attendees show up, fly in from all over the country. I think we had
congratulations.
People
that's great. Yeah. I'm Natalie Gochner. I'm joined in the studio by Dan McKay and Sasha Lux Morgan. In our next segment, we're going to talk about growth.
You're listening to Both Sides of the Aisle on KCPW. For more episodes of all our in-house podcasts, click on the Local Programs tab at kcpw.org. And while you're there, please consider a donation to KCPW to support public radio in your community.
This is Dan McKay on the right.
This is Sasha Lux Morgan on the left.
Natalie Gochner in the Political Center. This is Both Sides of the Aisle. Okay, we want to talk about growth, but before we do that, on the break, we were talking about, this 40% spread in the primaries for Romney and for Curtis. And the question was raised, does this mean that the caucus convention system is obsolete? In other words, it's just absolutely not even representative in any way, shape, or form of the body politic.
Are you editorializing in your question? Is it possible to editorialize in your question?
Some people say you facilitate.
Leading the witness.
You know, you moderate both sides of the aisle. And I'm going, the middle is not about moderating. It's a point of view. Mm. So I'm sharing my point of view here.
In your question.
And I want
leading the witness.
I want Sasha to jump in too, but we've seen this multiple times.
Oh, the caucus convention system should go. It should absolutely go. Yeah. It keeps people out of the process.
Exclusionary, out of date.
Oh, yeah.
You
want
to defend it then?
Are you here to defend it or no?
Well, I just look at this and I'm saying, again, I go back to Robert Charles Lessig, famous liberal from the Midwest. Okay. Robert Charles Lessig, his comment was, the last thing you need is more money in politics. And the only thing I will say that we got out of all of our prime...
Do you know how much Senator Hatch paid per caucus vote?
Hey, I let you editorialize in your question, Madam Moderator slash point of view.
Opinionator.
Opinionator. The only thing we got out of the primary, the only thing we got was we spent a lot of money and all the results were predictable. Mm-hmm. In convention, Mitt Romney qualified for the primary. But again, he was very critical of the president. And if he hadn't been critical of the president, I'm convinced he sails to the nomination. Chris Herod, he got onto that ballot. I mean, if you're hanging on a cliff and your fingernail is saving your life, you have a problem
as a
candidate.
Your fingernail's going
to break. Yeah, you have a problem as a candidate. And that's exactly what happened. I'm not going to let you cut me off yet. I'm going off
he
on this.
You can tell I'm about ready to move on.
Ready. What I will say, though, is you can talk about exclusionary, you can talk about all these other things, but I will say this until I'm blue in the face. We got no...
You want to be careful about that. People might think you're a Democrat.
No benefit out of the primary system. The only thing we got was low turnout, low interest, and we got very little participation in the whole deal. And I think you look at caucus versus the other, and you had greater attendance at caucus night than you did on primary night and for the primary ballot.
Well, let it stand there. Sasha, do you want to add anything about watching two
Should
Republicans argue on both sides of the aisle?
Emily's laughing.
And you know, so both registered Republicans. I've worked for Republicans most of my political career, even though I don't have my policy career. I've always been an at-will employee. I've been a presidential appointee, worked for three different governors, and I just – disagree with this guy.
I've got to admit, I do take great pleasure in watching the Republicans argue about the caucus convention system. Like, it's
so
just on the left, it's really nice to see, you know.
Yeah.
Well, some
and
internal
Dan, we're going to get there. We're going to get there. We've already made progress.
We've already made progress.
I feel confident that the Utah Supreme Court is going to get this on the ballot in November. So
well, there's
let's
that.
See if I'm right. Well, we'll see if I'm right. I mentioned we were going to
talk
about
of activist judges. What was
yeah,
what
judicial restraint.
It was judicial restraint you mentioned earlier.
I want to talk about growth, and it's because of what I'm seeing in Salt Lake County, the capital county, the largest county in the state. The fights in Harriman, the Olympia Hills project, the fights in Holiday, the Holiday Quarter, or the old Cottonwood Mall site. And I'm finding it really interesting that there's not more proactive steps being taken by elected officials to guide this growth. It's a very prosperous time in our state. So I wanted to ask the legislator, what are you seeing up on Capitol Hill? What are they doing to address the sense of loss that people feel when they see, you know, vacant lots going away and fields going away and they're worried about their air quality, congestion on the roads? What are we doing?
Well, we're building bigger roads, so we have that going for us.
Have you ever heard the saying that roads beget roads?
Yeah, I have, actually.
Okay. Induced
really,
demand.
It's really quite sad.
That's the idea that the more roads you build, the more congested they become because you just create more.
You've made it more possible for people to live further out, so they're going to live further out. You're going to get more commuters.
But, but you could also say we were behind the curve and we were just addressing needed growth, which I think is right.
Yeah, I think from a positive look, you see the state looking for ways to continue to provide economic incentive for growth and those kinds of things. And then I think
we have a growth challenge, but we're incentivizing more growth. Is that what?
I like the way that's going. I'm not saying it's great. I'm just saying you see that happening,
yes,
right?
Okay.
But you also don't see a willingness from the state. Because I think the only thing that's left, really, is to usurp land use authority from everybody throughout throughout the state and say, well, hey, within a certain ring, you're going to do it X, Y, and Z. I think we only want to do that in Salt Lake City.
A growth boundary or...
You missed my little joke there. I said we only want to usurp land use
City.
Authority from Salt Lake City. But
Thanks, we appreciate that.
Yeah, well, we give.
But...
We give and we give.
It seems to me like this is an issue that Democrats could run with a little bit. In other words, you have all this growth, you have a lot of growth challenges, and is there enough being done to address it?
I don't think there is. As a Democrat, and particularly a young Democrat, the housing market is not keeping up with the demand. People are moving to Utah. Families are growing at an incredible rate. And I don't see anything really proactive being done to make sure that, you know, people want to move to Utah. Why don't we want to continue to make Utah a place where people want to live?
Mm-hmm. So, Natalie, is your question, I'm just going to turn it on you.
I know. I had a feeling it was coming.
So is your question, you know, should we stop incentivizing growth?
Mm-hmm. You know, this is a really tough thing. But so I go back to the 90s, from 1991 to 2000, which I, you know, have a column in the Deseret News basically saying that it was the most prominent period of growth in our state's recent history. We added over 500,000 people to our state in that decade. But
how many were liberals? Can you tell me? Make sure I get this right.
Are you that scared of liberals?
No.
I saw Capitol Hill whole bunch of things. The state hosted a growth summit that was simulcast, all the TV stations. You were probably 10 at the time, Dan, so you may not remember, but
about that, yeah.
They created a quality growth commission that gave planning grants to local governments to help them plan better. They created the Leroy McAllister Fund. Leroy McAllister was a legislator in Utah County, and it was a land fund to preserve critical lands. So you have a beautiful view shed or an important agricultural property or historical property, and you buy the development rights. So and Governor Herbert, by the way, chaired that commission, was very active in all this. Envision Utah was started. So there's an incredible legacy that came from the late 1990s, mid to late 1990s. And I guess I'm just asking the question, what's going on now?
Well, look at Point of the Mountain.
Okay.
You can look at Point of the Mountain. You can look at, you know,
where
you've
got a commission or an authority.
Well, it's not just
things.
And it's not just that. It's you've got active elected official mayors and council people, both county and the cities, that are trying to figure out what's going to be the future of this area, mm-hmm. and how do we make traffic in and out of this area work, and how are we going to make growth work?
So the market gave you all this activity, mm-hmm. and the state is trying to figure out scenarios of growth. Sasha,
Salt Lake is going to grow up, or it's going to grow out down to Point of the Mountain towards Utah County, out to the west.
Down to Juab. I mean, the out is like way
on
the periphery at this point.
It's huge. It's something we have to be managing actively. What was going on in the 90s sounds like it was fantastic. But what happened with that progress and that foresight and that momentum? You know, the 90s was a couple decades ago at this point.
Yeah.
So where was this planning? I mean, I think post-Olympics onward, it was pretty clear that Utah was going to grow, that it was going to continue to be a place that people want to move to, people want to raise families in. We need to have a strategic plan. The growth is not going away.
Yeah. Dan, one more question on this, just since you're a developer, and we'll let Sasha add in if she'd like. But I find it interesting that there's so much concern about density. And I say that because the things that we really want, clean air, careful use of water, walkability, mm-hmm. Concentration of activities, you know, the vibrancy of things, those things all come from density. Mm-hmm. And it's as if people don't realize that density is an outcome. It's not really a goal. It's not like, oh, let's go be dense. It's more like, no, let's be walkable. You know, let's use our resources.
Although that is
wisely.
The Republican Party, so we can go.
Well, that's why I'm just sort of. I just wanted to hear your comments on density. We'll let Sasha in
because I said that for Sasha.
Because Sasha said something really important. She said we're either going to grow up or we're going to grow out, and of mm-hmm. course we're going to do both. But Salt Lake County has to get comfortable with becoming more dense because there's not a lot more land, and we're adding, you know. Tens of thousands of people.
I think there's an organic way to do this, right? And it's not a forced way of doing things, which is, I think, the conversation that needs to be had. Because I think you see neighborhoods grow at generation points, right, where they start out as single-family residential, mm-hmm. and then they get more dense from there. And then they eventually build up, right? Salt Lake City and the high-rises we have in Salt Lake City, if you go back to maps 50 years ago, those high-rises didn't exist. Mm-hmm. Why? Because you relied on redevelopment, and relied on those.
And it was easier to go out.
And it was easier to go out. Mm-hmm. I think that's filling in, and as the easier-to-go-out story is filling in and is completing the pie, so to speak, I think you'll see a wave that pushes pressure back towards the middle back towards infrastructure, back towards the ability to, you know, absorb the growth in a better, different way.
Sasha, what would you like to see government doing when it comes to guiding growth, managing growth, promoting quality growth?
I think one of the things that we definitely need to be continuing to focus on with this growth is the issue of affordable housing. I would like to see government making real steps to assure that as we are putting in these lovely luxury apartments downtown, that we are still continuing to make it so that people are able to afford to live downtown. I prefer to live somewhere high
and
density.
So you want housing waivers? You want rent controls? What do you want?
I mean, I'm not going to say rent control because I feel like I might get yelled at.
That was a planted bomb there.
I'm aware.
There are a few things that economists agree on.
That's one place we might actually.
Rent controls are one of them that most economists dislike. So
And I, you know, in New York, I've seen, you know, some of the problems with rent control there. But I think just saying, oh, you know, we'll just figure it out. It'll just happen on its own organically. I think is not a great strategy for trying to manage a state.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, more to come. I think we could have some interesting conversations about it. I do think that it's an important issue for both political parties, both the left and the right, to put their best ideas out there.
I think if the Democrats ran on a platform of keeping housing affordable and building more housing for student and young professional types, that could be a real winning issue for us.
Yeah, yeah. Hey, it's the holiday week, fireworks ablaze. What is the opinion on the left and the right about fireworks in this state? My husband can't stand them.
Really?
Well, I mean, the abuse of them.
Yeah.
You know, that there's things leaving the ground, going up 30, 40 feet in the air, landing on people's roofs, that there's the danger that comes from it.
Freedom decorated.
Freedom decorated.
Blow stuff up. It's great.
You have a big holiday, you know.
We're not blowing things up because as an economist background, I don't like burning money.
I don't mind. So you don't like to go to Wendover and buy like.
I'm not
that guy. I guess
it's
not Wendover. It's Evanston where you go buy
Evanston
the big.
Evanston is, yeah.
The two like poles.
Yeah, where you buy the bazooka.
I'm the same. I go to the party and free ride. To use
yeah,
an economic
that's
term.
Right.
I let
I'm
someone else
rider.
Buy the fireworks.
Yeah.
Let them burn their own money.
But
free rider is so much more attractive than being free loader, right? It does.
But
they're
Dan,
both the same.
I do. I would like to see the legislature rein it in.
We did last year. Mm-hmm. We narrowed it down
narrowed
so
the
that
time
there's
frame.
Yeah. So there's really only 7 days.
I'd go down to two. I'd go down to 2 days.
Mm. I'd like to keep them on the ground.
Yeah. Fireworks on the ground?
Yeah, I don't like them shooting up into the sky.
I live on the very edge of the boundary for Salt Lake City. For my street is the last street east where they're allowed. And I'm like, couldn't we put that like one block over?
Oh, yeah. Interesting.
Yeah. Well,
I don't mind. You know what I get, though? And this is it's inevitable every year with the mortars going up in the air. People still out in my area have a lot of horses. And this is crazy in Salt Lake County. But people do not like... Their horses do not like the fireworks.
And I
do
can't imagine why.
Well, and dogs.
I feel sympathetic, honestly, for those folks who complain about their horses being spooked by the fireworks.
Yeah.
So I get it. It is a war zone.
That's a
for
negative externality.
However, let's think about what we can be grateful for. Like, let's look at this glass is half full. At least there are fireworks and there aren't like we're constantly dealing with the issues that we're having in the Middle East. Where when you hear an explosion, you don't think it's a firework. We generally, when we hear an explosion, we think, oh, there's a firework or something gone on, right? That's our – but I would say we can be grateful for that we don't have other explosions.
Dan, we're going to stick with you so that Sasha can be preparing
terrible.
It if she doesn't have one. But can you give us a gripe for this week? And
yes.
I hope Sasha knows we do a gripe.
Oh, I know.
Okay,
I know.
She's ready.
My gripe is the conspiracy theory that Verizon and Comcast are perpetuating upon me and my family and my neighborhood. They have combined this last few weeks. Their service has gone out, and it's a complete disaster. All of us are in a lurch. We have no internet. The TV is spotty. It's World Cup week, you know. And if I watched that, I would be really mad, but I don't.
Too liberal and European.
No. It's the shorts are too short. They must wear longer.
Does that make you
pants.
A little uncomfortable?
I'm just kidding. So
you're good on your feet, Dan, even though you're sitting.
This whole Verizon Comcast conspiracy this last week. Now they've promised that they will have it fixed on July 5th. I will say this: while it's a gripe about those two things, my kids have been very present, and that's been nice.
Nice. Sasha, what's your gripe?
My gripe is the road construction at the University of Utah. I work up there. They have to get it together. I don't understand how they can have that bad traffic control around the hospital. So it's killing me this week. My commute to work is usually like 6 minutes, and it's been like 25.
Oh, that's rough.
They got to get it under control. It's
that's
bad.
A summer phenomenon. And off the academic year, you know, you get that. My gripe is Mexico losing in the World Cup. And then the new Mexican president. I'm a little nervous about what's going on down there. What a crazy country right now. But then I'll also add that the fact that Dan said World Cup week, it's really a World Cup month.
I know. As soon as I came out
so
of my
I just
mouth,
had to get like... him on it. Hey, you've been listening to Both Sides of the Aisle. I'm Natalie Gochner, joined by Dan McKay and Sasha Lux Morgan. Thanks for listening. And the program is produced by Emily Means. Thank you.